All right, so good afternoon, everybody. So this is the last talk, so please be patient. One more. Okay, so I will talk about the recent observational progresses of star-forming galaxies at the redshift up to 10. And I will showcase the properties of the star formation and morphology, then move on to the interstellar medium and dark matter halos. Well, I'm an optical astronomer, so I want to start from the optical observational results, then move on to the ALMA result. Okay, so the recent progresses of the high-Z star-forming galaxy observations are very, very rapid. As you know, that the deep optical near-infrared observations have confirmed galaxies up to redshift 8.7 having the strong Riemann alpha emission line. And also, more recently, there's a report that the Riemann alpha containing break object may be identified at redshift 11. And as you have learned in the Naoki Yoshida's talk this morning, there's a report of the oxygen 3 88 micron detection for an optically selected Riemann alpha emitter at redshift 7. So in this way, the optical near-infrared observations and the ALMA follow-up observations are very, one of the major drivers of studying high-Z star-forming galaxies. So then I move on to the properties of the star formation and morphology. These are very important to understand the interstellar medium of the high-Z galaxies, because these star formation produce the UV photons, and the morphology, size of the ISM, two of them determine the radiation field. So this is very important. So major efforts of the high-Z galaxy observation is one of the other major efforts are the Hubble Frontier Fields program, or HFF. As you know, the HFF is targeting the six massive clusters with the Hubble optical and near-infrared images, and exploiting the lensing magnification, you can identify very faint star-forming galaxies at redshift 6 to 10, and these can be the sources of sources of the reionization. And three-year program, this is a three-year program spending the 840 orbits of the Hubble, and it started from fall 2013. And a number of the early papers have been published using the part of data. The observations are still going on. Now the four out of six cluster observations have been completed, and the entire observations will be completed this September. So before then, still you have the four, cluster data sets. So you can, carry out the mass modeling using the 100 to 200 multiple images to get the accurate mass modeling. And then you can also identify the dropout with the two colors using the dropout techniques. And so far, the 130 galaxies at redshift 6 to 10 are identified in the four cluster fields. And of course, the number is not that large compared with the previous Candel survey and so on. But a great thing of the HFF is you have the strongly magnified galaxies. Here, now the 18 out of these 130 galaxies are strongly magnified, like the magnification factor is greater than 10. So these are very important sources. And these are luminosity functions given by these four cluster fields, and together with the previous measurements of the Hubble ultra deep field and candles. And if you look at the redshift 7, these red points are new results. And previously, with no lensing effects, you could went down to the minus 17 magnitude. But this time, thanks to the other great magnification factors, you could push the other limit down to the other minus 14 magnitude or so. And the interesting thing is that, if you go to the very low luminosity limit, you would expect the other feedback effect, UV radiation heating or their feedback and so on. But so far, down to minus 14, we do not find the signatures of such a feedback effect, or that, you know, if you have that, then you may have the possible, you know, truncation, but it looks pretty smooth. So well, even with the other Hubble frontal fields, it would be difficult to identify, you know, such a, you know, turnaround. And yeah, this is very important, as the other, you know, Andrea and Nick, you know, discussed in the recent archive papers. And then, you know, you can derive the UV luminosity density evolution up to redshift 10 using these faint sources. So interesting thing is that, you know, this is a, you know, smooth, you know, decrease from the redshift 2 to 10. And previously, there was the other big argument of the other rapid drop of the UV luminosity density at around redshift 8 to 10. However, this time we do not find the such a, you know, rapid decrease. Actually, the reason is that, you know, we found that the other, you know, the field-to-field variation of the source number counts are large. This is probably the other galaxy bias is large. So you know, you have the more chance to look at the other, you know, less dense regions. So that's why you could see the other possible decrease. But having the other large numbers of the other larger areas of the sky. So you know, if you average them over, then you have the other smooth decrease. And then here, maybe we discussed about the star formation rate density thing in the Len Cowles talk. So I want to revisit this thing. So last week, you know, we saw the nice paper of Jim Dunlop using the Hubble Ultra Deep Field optical data and ARMA data. And, you know, they derived the star formation rate density. Well, you know, if you interpret this, you know, UV luminosity density to the cosmic star formation rate density here, then if you overplot the Dunlop et al.'s point here, then obviously at around redshift 2, you know, dusty starbursts are, you know, dominating the star formation rate density. But you don't see much of the other excess here at redshift around 4 or 5. However, you know, there's a caveat. You know, the Dunlop et al. You know, analysis, you know, includes the optical, the galaxies with optical counterparts, or the, you know, the starting from the optical data and looking at the millimeter, you know, fluxes. But they probably miss the millimeter sources with no optical counterparts. So this is what, you know, Len, you know, was worrying about these studies. So then Sergio Fujimoto, you know, nicely carried out the large statistical studies for the other ARMA data, and he, you know, looked at the other deep ARMA data of hours, as well as the other archival data up to the other shown in the other last summer, and he obtained the other number count of the 1.2 millimeter regime, and these red points are the new points, and you know, also it exploit the other lensing effect. So the other SAGE look at the other critical lines of the other massive clusters. So having the other very, you know, low flux regime, the data points exist. So then the smooth, you know, number count down to around 0.01 millijansky, 10 microjansky. And if you integrate this down to the other detection limit of the other 0.1 several, you know, the other millijansky, then the other, you know, the total resolved fraction touches to the cosmic infrared background. Of course, you know, this CMB, you know, measurement have the about 30% of the errors, but it's around the middle. So probably, you know, we are now having the great capability of ARMA, you know, we see the most of the other millimeter sources. And then the question is that, so what are they? So we looked at the other, you know, these, you know, optical counterparts of the other, these, you know, faint sources. Then about 60% of the other sources have the other optical counterparts. And most of them are like, you know, Lyman-Blake, having the colors of Lyman-Blake galaxies, you know, SBDK galaxies. But 40% of them do not have the obvious, clear optical near infrared counterparts, and these optical data are reaching down to 27 magnitude for the Hubble data. So how this 40% contributes to the total star, cosmic star formation rate density? That is the interesting question, but it is very difficult to understand because you don't know the redshift distribution or, and so on. So, this is the first step. So we naively assume the submillimeter galaxy, redshift distribution. Then you know where the source is. Then, naively you can, calculate cosmic star formation rate density by this method. Then you get this point here, and this, the dotted line is total cosmic star formation rate given by the optical observations plus, dust corrected value. So, the error is large, but it could be that the new total, cosmic star formation rate would be about 40 times larger than the previous, estimates from the optical data plus dust correction. Of course, but, error bar is large, so maybe 0 to 40 or 50% different. So this, the crude estimates suggest that maybe, cosmic star formation, dust insularity, cosmic star formation rates are important, but it may not, push the number beyond, say, a factor of 2 or 10. So, which is consistent with the evolution of the stellar mass density. And, And then I want to move on to the other galaxy morphologies in the other Hubble data again. So now the other, after the other Hubble starts the other great survey since 2009 with the other near infrared camera with UFSHI 3, so a lot of the other good, data, high quality data that can be used for the other morphology studies. And these are, examples of the redshift 0 to 10 galaxies are photometrically selected galaxies. And of course, you can see the, these sources are, resolved, spatially resolved, even at redshift 8. Here it is very difficult, but it's elongated. Okay? So you can, with the careful analysis, you can derive the other effective radii of the those high redshift galaxies. So these analyses have been done since 2004 or so. But now we have the large data set. So using the entire data set available for this kind of analysis, now we have the 190,000 star forming galaxies from redshift 0 to 10. So carrying out the other it is very difficult in analysis, but the careful profile fitting with the Celsic index tell you that the other star forming galaxies beyond redshift 1 give you about the Celsic index of the 1.5, although it has the other large scatters. So this is average value, not all. And then the other, having the other such a Celsic index and carefully fitting the other to the entire data, then you can estimate the effect of the surface brightness dimming and so on. Then the other, you can derive the effective radius from the data set. So this shows the other result of the other, about L-star galaxy, evolution of the other effective radius from redshift 0 to around 10 or so. And this follows the other, the size follows the other 1 plus Z minus 1.1 relation. And, if you look at the, especially high redshift galaxies, they are very small, and this is very small in physical scale as well, like the a few hundred parsec, about 300 parsec, okay? So if you compare the other high redshift galaxy, such high redshift galaxy with the present day Milky Way M82 in the physical scale, the size is something like this. So it is very small. So the other, like the, this size, high Z galaxy size corresponds to the giant molecular association of the Milky Way galaxy. So it is very, very different. So it is very interesting. So then, probably, their star formation rate is high, so the radiation field is very, very high. I will come back to this later. And then I go to the armor, step inside the armor, you know, called ISM. So the easiest thing to look at the size of the cold ISM, you know, distribution is look at the 1 millimeter continuum of the dust emitting regions. And the early studies of Ikarashi and Simpson et al. Show that, you know, these, you know, 1 millimeter sources are compact, like the 1 kiloparsec or less than 1 kiloparsec. However, you know, if you plot the more recent data, then they are largely scattered around the optically determined, you know, size of the L-star galaxies. So maybe, you know, it is, you know, too early to conclude that whether the cold ISM or, you know, dust emitting region is smaller than the stellar distribution. But so, you know, more, you know, careful analysis is needed to reach to the conclusion. And also coming back to the optical data, you know, some of the galaxies have many of them show the clumping structures. So it is very interesting feature, something like this, you know, from redshift 0 to 3, and even from redshift 4 to 8. So so it is interesting to quantify these clumpiness. So you need the very careful, you know, fitting to the major component of the galaxies and removing that, and then you can identify the clumps. So counting the galaxies with clumps divided by the number of the old galaxies, then you can define the clumpy galaxy fraction. And then you can look at the clumpy galaxy fraction as a function of redshift for this luminosity range. Then, you know, there's an increasing trend from redshift 0 to 2, and which is as suggested by the previous work of Guo, you know, Ferguson et al. But beyond the redshift 2, the clumpy galaxy fraction decreases. So this shape, and redshift 2, you know, more than half of the L star galaxies have the clumps. And interestingly, this shape of the redshift distribution really reminds us the Madalidi plot or cosmic star formation rate density evolution, like this. So this compares the cosmic star formation rate density plot, and this is the clumpy galaxy fraction. So peak is a little bit different, and the thickness of this is a little bit different, but it has the possible correlation. And if you compare this with the merging fractions, you know, major fraction given by the magenta colors, and the minor, you know, major fraction for the green. So as you can see, you know, the trend is the rising or flat. It is very different from this peak structure of the clumpy galaxy fraction. So, you cannot explain this, you know, clumpy galaxy fraction by the simple, you know, the merger things, but maybe something different is needed. So probably, you know, violent disk instability scenario would be needed. Once you get well-established disks, then you would get dynamical disk instability, and it is growing to a redshift 2 or so. But we do not have the theoretical prediction. So we want to compare these, you know, observational results with the more sophisticated models. Okay. So then I want to show the star formation rate density evolution, or sigma SFR. So this shows the sigma SFR as a function of the star formation rate and stellar mass here, and the gray dots and this gray one shows the redshift 0 Sloan galaxies and the Milky Way, and magenta for redshift 2, and the cyan for redshift 4-ish, and 5, 6, 8 for the other redshift 8 for the other blue one. So as you can see, star formation surface density is increasing, monotonically increases towards high Z. So it is very interesting. So very intensive star formation takes place in a small body volume, and probably state of the other ISM should change. And if it is so, then as Deluge nicely shows the anti-correlation of the sigma SFR and carbon 2, and could be the explanation for the carbon 2 deficit. And then, so let's look at the ISM more closely. Well, from the optical side, major emission lines are from the H2 regions. In other words, warm ISM. Well, in the past decade, a lot of the other deep near-infrared spectroscopy have been carried out for redshift 2 to 3-ish galaxies. And one of the major, important discussion is found in the offset of the BPT diagram, which is defined by the oxygen 3507 divided by H beta as a function of the N2 divided by H alpha. So there's a redshift 0 sequence for the star-forming galaxies. But if you look at the redshift 2 galaxies, this sequence offset towards the up or, right or whatever. So, we know this kind of the evolution. And then, I think the one of the interesting, the change of the optical emission line property is the oxygen 3 to oxygen 2 line ratio, or O32. So this is oxygen 3507 and 33727, okay? And of course, this changes by the AGN, but from the deep X-ray observations, no AGN signatures. And for high Z galaxies, we see that the 03 to 2 ratio is about 1 to 10, which is the very different from the local galaxies whose 03 to ratio is below about unity or less than unity. So no AGN signatures in the high Z galaxies, and these are extinction corrected. So why that it happens? So this diagram nicely explains the reason. So the y-axis shows the 032, and high Z galaxies, like redshift 2 to 3 galaxies, shows the very high 032 ratio compared with the redshift 0 Sloan Deep Dark Sky Survey galaxies. And these three lines indicate the photoionization models and changing metallicity, high metallicity to low metallicity. And these three lines indicate the different ionization parameter, more ionizing photons per atoms are coming from this way, and about the order of magnitude different from this to this. And then, for high redshift galaxies, you cannot explain the usual ionization parameter. Well, of course, from left to right, this is the R23 index. So it is a famous metallicity indicator. So it changes like this. But well, you cannot explain this, but O32 is the indicator of the ionization parameter. So you do need to change the ionization parameter to explain these populations, these high redshift populations. And if you simultaneously obtain the ionization parameter and the oxygen abundance, then you can see about the order of magnitude difference of the ionization parameter. And sorry, so in this way, for high Z galaxies, very efficient ionized photon production is going with the young stellar population. So ISM, ionization state is different from typical low Z galaxies. And then, of course, you want to look at the much higher redshift, like redshift greater than 6, as maybe Andrea is more excited. So from the optical side, for redshift 6 to 8, there's another a suggestion of the high ionization parameters, which are given by the Keck spectroscopy of the Darmstadt et al. And these are redshift 7 and 7.7 dropout galaxies and Lyman alpha emitters. And they show the moderately strong carbon 3 1666 and the carbon 4 1548, and and equivalent radiuses as large as 10 angstrom. So first you may worry that they could be the other AGN. Well, of course, yes, it's possible. However, there's no clear indication of the other even high ionization lines of the nitrogen 5 and so on that cannot be made by young stars. So it is also possible that these galaxies are also highly ionized. Then come back to the other Alma results. Well, left panel is your favorite Riemann, no, 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 carbon 2 luminosity as a function of the total star formation rate. And this is a local relation and K-Park result here. And this is the other upper limit of the no detection. And there are two more points here. They are given by the other dropout galaxies of the lens sources given by the Knudsen et al. So, well, you know, not only the Riemann emitters, but also the other, you know, dropout galaxies are showing the other deficit of the other carbon 2. And also the interesting thing is that, you know, coming back to the Inoue et al's the other object, the other, well, there's a strong oxygen 3 high ionization line here, but, well, you know, carbon 2 line is not detected again. So maybe, you know, these, you know, pieces of evidence would suggest that the high ionization state of ISM is pretty, you know, common for the other high Z galaxies. And then the other, well, I think we discussed a lot about it, but, you know, this shows the other infrared luminosity over the other UV luminosity as a function of UV slope. And as you can see, the other, you know, from the recent, you know, Buens et al.'s result, or, you know, the other, this relation is the other quite, you know, low, you know, IR luminosity is quite low. So this is, you know, and also there, we also included the other, you know, Sergio nicely included the other latest, you know, Hubble frontier field data of the you know, lens sources, but still, you know, they, a lot of the sources are no detections. So it's interesting. So so we don't know the still the, you know, the physical origins of the this, you know, weak IR for a given beta. However, probably, you know, dust properties, including dust temperatures, should evolve and for high Z galaxies at redshift 5 to 8. And then, okay, so I go through the other last part of the other my talk. So the last part is the other hosting dark matter halos. Okay, so yes, hosting dark matter halos and the high Z galaxies are important. Well, as you can see here, the other, this is the other, you know, the star formation, stellar mass as a, divided by the other halo mass, you know, or SHMR as a function of the halo mass, which is given by the lensing analysis, lensing clustering, abundance analysis of the cosmos data by the Alexey Leotto. And you can see the other nice, you know, the other peak at around the 10 to the 12 solar mass of the dark matter halo. So this shape tells you the other is a good, you know, indicator of the other gas cooling and inflow, outflow, and feedback. So, but well, you know, this is very important. So you want to derive the other, you know, evolution of the such a, you know, this SHMR relation. However, you know, you cannot, you know, use the lensing technique for high Z galaxies beyond the redshift 1, 2 or so. So the last results are, you know, clustering and abundance. But abundance, simple abundance matching would, you know, the other, you know, gives the other systematically different answers due to the other, you know, systematics given by halo occupations of galaxies within one halo. But you know, if you add the other clustering result, then the other at redshift 0, you know, you can reproduce the result of the lensing using the clustering method. So then the other, so it is great to use the other clustering to measure, to estimate the hosting dark matter halo. So then next question is that how you can, you know, the other calculate the clustering. So then you need the very large sample of the high Z galaxies. Here we have the other super hyper spin-cam having the other great sensitivity and the large area field of view. So that allows us to the other, you know, calculate the clustering and to estimate the other halo masses at redshift 4 to 7. And so these are, you know, angular correlation functions of the other, you know, our Hubble and also the other the HST data. And halo masses are constrained by the other HOD modeling. And then this is a result of the stellar mass to halo mass ratio as a function of the halo mass for the other comparing the redshift 0 and our data points of redshift 4 to 7. And well, you know, the, you know, mass range is limited still, but you know, at redshift 10, the mass of the 10 to the 11 solar mass, you know, there's a clear, you know, evolution from redshift 0 to 4, you know, downward and coming up to, towards redshift 7. So if you plot, you know, the SHM value from redshift 0 at the mass of 10 to the 11th solar mass here, then it goes down and up, right? It goes down and up. And if you compare this with the recent the numerical simulation result and some semi-analytic models, you know, this comes like this, and you cannot explain the upturn of the SHM MR toward higher redshift. And I discussed this with the Lucio, and Lucio is thinking that this may be the possible signature of the feedback efficiency. All right, so I want to wrap up my talk. I talked a lot, and So I talked about the recent observational progresses of galaxies at redshift up to 10 with the data of optical and armor. And the star formation and morphology section, I first showed the other no significant, you know, the drop off of the luminosity function at the faint end that is found down to the minus 14 magnitude. And armor sources with no optical counterparts may suggest additional star formation rate density of about 40% at redshift 2. And the optical size is the decreasing towards high Z by 1 plus Z, minus 1.1. And optical, you know, the clumpy galaxy fraction peaks at redshift 2, you know, similar to the one of the Madar-Lilly plot. And there's a monotonic decrease of star formation rate density from redshift 0 to 8. And for ISM, the high ionization state is identified for optically selected galaxies at redshift 2 to 3. And you know, even higher redshift, you know, the high ionization of the carbon 3, carbon 4 lines can be seen. So it is probably related to the recent result of the carbon 2, you know, armor carbon 2 deficit and the oxygen 3, 88 micron detection. And the low infrared UV luminosity ratio is found, so probably this is, you know, indicates the dust property evolution to the higher redshift. And finally, I showed stellar mass to halo mass ratio upturn from at the redshift around 4, and this could be the other signature of the other feedback efficiency. So I stop here.
Masami, there recently was a paper by Rachel Livermore who claimed that they can, using Hubble frontier fields, can measure the luminosity functions all the way like to 12.5 magnitudes, which is like 2 magnitudes deeper than anyone else. So, right. So what do you think about it? I mean, it looks incredible.
Yes.
It's also hard to believe that everyone screwed up that big.
So, our modeling and our result tells you the other, you know, down to minus 14 magnitude. But, near to the other, critical lines, magnification, quickly changes. So a small difference of the other, mass modeling makes that difference of the other minus 14 or minus 12 magnitudes. So then you'd worry that, how we can believe these results? Yes. But, this is the other, statistical thing. So one by one, we have the large errors of the 2 magnitude or 3 magnitude errors. But to derive these luminosity function, we carry out the end-to-end simulations. Well, what we should do, we produce galaxies on the other source plane, and distribute it, which holds the other certain luminosity function, and then you artificially observe them through the other mass models, and then the other you repeat this process. Then you can derive, and also the source positions are changed. So sometimes you get a very highly magnified object, sometimes not. But and you carry out this kind of Monte Carlo simulations, and then these error bars here shown here include such an effect of the other the small differences of the relative positions of the critical line to the source. So of course the other if you look at the source one by one, so there's a large uncertainty. But statistically, sometimes you get the high magnification object here, but not here. But sometimes, you know, this source becomes a high magnification object, sometimes this won't. So this compensate. And
I'm asking you about the Livermore result.
Yes, sorry?
Not about your.
Oh, whose one? Wittring.
Rachel Livermore, who goes to 12.5.
Livermore?
So do you believe there? I believe your result, but do you believe there? Because they are magnitude and a half deeper than you.
Okay, so I want to let you know that actually, you know, we derive the luminosity function by the technique of the source plane technique that we did. And also image plane, you know, observed plane analysis, end-to-end simulation we did. But not other groups are doing that. So, you know, if their model, luckily, you know, their, you know, critical lines, luckily, the path near to the source, then they get the extremely high magnification objects. Then you estimate the very faint source, like around here. So I think it is very dangerous to just discussing that the mass model and not doing such end-to-end simulations. So, well, but
let's try a few more questions.
Very nice talk and amazing work by Sergi. I like the claim that you do when you say that maybe the cosmic star formation rate at its peak would be even higher if you have a look to the far infrared luminosity. But I mean, I want to ask you, how do you derive the redshift of that sources that don't have optical counterparts?
So yes, this is a very important point. So I explained it actually, but I want to explain it again. Maybe it was not clear. So yes, there's no optical counterpart, so you don't know the redshift distribution. That is key. So we cannot get the reliable results. So one thing you can do is assuming redshift distribution of the known, sub-millimeter galaxies. Well, you don't know the luminosity dependence and so on. But if you assume the known, sub-millimeter distribution given by, say, so given some millimeter redshift distribution, then you get this result. However, if the other, for example, submillimeter, the redshift distribution is skewed higher redshift, more likely to be the higher redshift, then this point goes this way, and maybe for redshift around 5 or 6, you have the other more, missing, dusty starburst component.
Okay, but at that redshift, you have got more undetections.
Mm-hmm. But you don't know the redshift distribution of the millimeter sources with no optical counterparts. So how do you know the redshift?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to ask about this, but since this is up, right, and I have another question. There's two effects going on here, surely. I mean, the Boulin's results from last week, show that the Moira correction is too large for the UV-selected sample, and that's going to go down, right? And it's going to be partially offset, mm-hmm. right, by the fact that there's a lot of missing sources, right, which mm-hmm. I think I agree with, and we saw it previously in T.C. Chen's work. I think there's offsetting effects that are going on here. So I think this diagram may get back almost to where it was by the time you're finished.
So actually please remember the result of the Navin Reddy. Navin Reddy nicely shows the stacked IRX beta relation that follows the Calzetti law at redshift 2. I'm talking about redshift 2, okay?
Bowen's result aren't even consistent with that at Z equals 2, right? I mean, they show that the correction is actually smaller, right? I mean, maybe I misread the paper, and maybe somebody else who read it closely can.
So maybe Richard Bowen's sources are in the Hubble Ultra Deep Field. They are faint, optical faint sources, metal poor population. So the Navin Reddy's object go down to 27-ish magnitude. So it covers the wide magnitude range. So in this sense, I think
Yeah, I just have a quick, very quick comment. When we do the simulation with the dust included, what we find is that indeed at a given beta color, you can start to have a mixture of population, some of which are intrinsically UV faint and follow on a much steeper IRX relation, such as the SMC one, and others which are already dust enriched and they become UV faint because of the extinction, which are instead on the calcetti low. So the problem is that as you go to higher and higher retch, it will be progressively dominated by those which have, you know, very, very low attenuation. But as you move down in redshift, it would be very, very hard to simply derive the right attenuation from the beta color because it's a mixture.
Let me go on and ask my question. Which was about the ionization systems, right? The the O3 to O2 and the PKT diagram.
Okay.
Stephanie, do you know if Frist suggested that this actually was a luminosity dependence effect? Mm-hmm. But essentially, you were actually biased upwards in luminosity at the high redshift. And if you compared with Sloan galaxies at low redshift, right, if you looked at the galaxies with same luminosity, they fell on the same diagnostic diagrams. We analyzed that in detail this year, and indeed that is actually true, right? I mean, if you compare with the same luminosity galaxies in the Sloan sample, you get exactly the same diagnostic diagrams. Can I just say one more sentence? I think it would be, I mean, if you really think that this is affecting the carbon 2, right, it would be really interesting to go in and look at the Sloan galaxies in carbon 2, right? I mean, and actually see if you could do something with those. I guess there's maybe no mechanism for doing that at this point, but there may be some historical data that you could actually use to make that.
Okay. So let me answer to your first part of the other question. So, this diagram, I think this is very good comment. Because the other, we also plot very faint, redshift zero galaxies, like Greenpeace, like extreme objects. That is shown with the other, green circles here. You know, they are, nice counterparts of the high-Z galaxies. You know, they are low mass, compact, having their similar properties of the high-Z galaxies. So, I agree that the other with them that the other there exists here such a low mass high ionization galaxies at redshift zero. However, abundance number density is so different. Like the other about two or three orders of magnitude higher for the high Z galaxies than the other Greenpeace at redshift zero. So interesting thing is that probably the Greenpeace thing is probably similar to the high Z galaxies. But very rare now. But at redshift two or three, majority of the galaxies are like something like Greenpeace. So probably the Greenpeace galaxies at redshift two distinguishes, like a dinosaur. And then you see the other still, the other remaining Greenpeace at redshift zero, something like Shirakans or something. Yeah. Okay.
So we're eating into our reception time now. So, Andre.
Just a comment when you said that Beruzzi et al. Abundance matching doesn't match clustering. I just have a comment that it's not because abundance matching fails in this case. It's just because they abundance match to a luminosity function, which underestimates luminosities at high masses.
Right. So which one? Actually, our result.
Not this one.
But
yeah, so this one. The stellar mass Hilbert mass relation that I showed in my talk, if it's also abundance matching, but there's one of the lines with abundance matching, that would go through your lensing points.
Okay.
So it's not a failure of abundance matching per se. It's the result depends on which stellar mass function you match to. They match to stellar mass function derived, which underestimates photometry for high mass galaxies.
So the high mass end, that's true. Yeah, maybe if, but how do you know the which stellar mass result should be?
You should use the right one, which you know.
Right.
You know
that. Yes.
So, so all observers know that Sloan, like the catalogs in the Sloan survey, underestimate luminosities at high masses, and yet a lot of people match to the luminosity function that derived with that photometry. Recently, this was remeasured, and the catalogs and measurements exist for photometry that includes envelopes of galaxies properly.
Yeah.
And if you do that, then it's
okay. Yeah, it follows. So actually, you know, personally, I really, you know, appreciate abundance matching technique, because the other the result of the other SHML, you know, evolution from register 0 to 7, really, you know, agree with the Peter Bellucci result. So I want to show that with this is published in 2015, but you know, if you compare the result of the SHMR of the clustering and the simple abundance matching result of the Peter Bellucci, then our results, like, yeah, I can show.
Very quick, please.
Yeah, quickly.
My beer is waiting.
So, okay. So this is a comparison for register 7, and these data points are our result with clustering, and dashed line, the Peter Bellucci result of the high Z. And well, you know, from register 7, 6, 5, and oh my God. Looks agree. So I think for high Z, at least for high Z, well, you know, the other Halo occupation distribution, you know, Halo occupation is the other, you know, we compare with the other, you know, abundance matching result and for high Z, and they agree very well.
Okay. Let's thank Masmi and all these speakers this afternoon. And there are some open questions we'll discuss tomorrow. You can add them to the list. I think we had a few more.
Oh, thank you.